This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week I investigate the latest in a spiritual revolution that's happening in this country, and that includes a whole range of topics from UFOs to healing technologies to consciousness to people's own personal transformation. And I think tonight I'm going to be talking to two people who are involved in all of that. I want to introduce the audience to Paul Greco and Francine Vale. They run the UFO Roundtable in New York in Yonkers, and they're good friends of mine, and I just ran into them last year in a crop circle, which was very exciting. But welcome, Francine and Paul.
Hey, Alan.
Hi, Alan. Thanks. Hi.
Let's start, first of all, with what you think. Today's the inauguration day, and we are moving into a new chapter, really, in our planet's history. And how do you both see that unfolding, and which directions you think we're going to be heading in?
Well, it's very historic, and I think it's a very good sign myself. I did vote for him.
But what's it a sign of? Where do you think we're going?
Well, I think it's about change, like he's always saying.
And do you think how does it affect people spiritually, you think, this new presidency, this new administration?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that it obviously seems to be opening people up to something that seems to have been lacking for quite some time, and that is joy. Mm. And I think it's a real feeling of joy that I saw today, and I can only hope and pray that real good will come of it, and we won't be disappointed.
But, do you feel, and I know, Francine, you've been around the spiritual world for a long time, do you feel there's a shift still happening? I mean, talk about, what you sense as an increase in the vibration of the planet. Can you talk about that?
I'll try. Many changes going on, and of course, what we hope and seek, those of us who are seekers, want to move into our higher selves. We're ready to move into a higher vibration, a better way of being on this planet, a more authentic way of being. The more closer we draw to our higher selves, the more authentic we can be in our expression of our souls in the world, and that's what we're really seeking, is a way to get there. And it's very hard because of all the distractions and the negativity and all the wars that we have on this planet, but we're going there anyway. We're all kind of moving in that direction, I see.
So do you think it's going to, it already seems like more people are opening up to spiritual essences, whatever that means, and I know Paul and I have been taking pictures of these orb beings, these light beings, and I've done a couple of shows on these, whatever they are, but how else do you think this vibration, are we seeing a shift in the vibration of the planet? Or we can also talk about orbs. Tell me, Paul, what do you think? I mean, how are things changing, around the planet as you see it?
Well, I just got a sign, actually. I had this unusual light thing over one of my pieces that just got accepted to the show.
Yeah, tell us about your art a little bit, and then go into what you saw. Describe your art.
Recently, I entered this show at the Katona Museum of Art, and I was actually accepted into it. And the funny thing is, I was taking photographs, in my room before the show, and this piece that got accepted was the one piece that had this really weird, like, I don't know what it is. It's like an oar, but it looks more like a rod.
I think it looks like a moving oar. You know how they look when they're moving fast, you capture them in the movement?
But let's tell people what we think orbs are. Just describe that. Describe what you think they are, or what they appear to be in photographs.
You know that they're like light. They're some type of a light that's captured in digital photographs. And
they can,
you know,
yeah, I'll tell people, they can appear as a sort of fuzzy ball, or sometimes there's a lot of complex geometric patterns in there, and they're obviously not light flares or even water molecules. It actually, no one really knows what they really are, but they seem to be appearing.
I see a ball of light in front of me about 14 or 15 years ago, and I didn't know what it was, but I felt that it was a spiritual essence, and it was about the size of a soccer ball, and it was a globe, and it was glowing, and the light was contained within it. Now, all these years later, I'm so involved and interested with Paul in photographing these orbs. Now, Paul is the one that takes hundreds and hundreds of pictures, and he captures them. I capture them, too, but he's really dedicated to it. And to me, they are balls of light. When they're captured on film, on the digital camera, you just see them as two-dimensional, obviously. But I think really three-dimensional balls of light.
But are they beings? Are they consciousness? Are they trying to talk to us?
Well, I think Paul is reluctant to say for sure what they are.
Oh, let's try.
I will tell you that I think that they're a spiritual energy that's manifesting in our world.
Yeah, I think why I'm so fascinated with them is because there seems to be this bridge, the veil between the dimensions is somehow getting thinner, and our worlds are colliding in a sense. It's proof, right?
Yeah, it's like Mikhail Ledwith says, that they're emanations, they're spirit emanations.
Yeah, I agree.
They're not the actual spirit, but they're the emanations from the spirit.
Because, you know,
so don't you think? Yeah, go ahead, friend.
It's like the emotions and the energy that you feel is connecting with this spiritual energy, and so there's like a communication between us and them.
It's similar, but I mean also different to crop circles, because we were in the crop circles. It seems to be a communication between humans and crop circles, right?
Yeah, you know, I just want to tell you, Alan, if you go to our website, we put on two photos that you might not have seen from that meeting we had in the crop circle last summer.
Give people your website so they can go to it.
All you have to do is Google UFO Roundtable.
Okay.
There's two recent photos that I just actually discovered that have these two, they're not orbs, but they're light anomalies that are in the crops, in the fields, and you can see them because we enlarged them, and they're very interesting, and that's the only two that I got the whole trip. It was those two, and actually, we met you.
Very beautiful. They really—they could be published in a book. They're really.
Oh, they are.
Yeah, really beautiful.
They should be.
They should be. They should be.
But these are like two global phenomenons that seem to be a direct connection. I mean, obvious. These are like concrete. You can't say that we're hearing voices or anything. These things show up on the ground in England and other places around the world, and these orbs show up in photographs everywhere. So it's like there's a doorway that's opening. That's what's so fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. And seems to get more complex every year.
They are, yeah. What do you make of that they're getting more complex every year?
I think it's the same phenomenon as the crop circles getting more complex.
What are they trying to tell us? I mean, I have my ideas about what they're trying to tell us, but what do you think they're trying? What did the crop circles say to you this year, this summer, when we were over there? What did you get?
We were so joyful in the crop circles. It was just, we were healthy. We were joyful. We were, everything went well. It was just an incredible experience.
It was just beauty.
It was just beauty. That's what it is.
You know, I felt a little dizzy, I have to say, when I went into my first crop circle, which was the 2012, where the planets were arranged in the shape of where they'll be on December 21st, 20. And I felt like really spaced out or something, but it was a physical, almost nauseous. It took me a while to get really used to the vibration of the crop circle. And then by the time I was leaving, and then that 8-8, appeared, the 8th on August 8th, it still blows me away that an 8 would appear on August 8th, 2008. I mean, but I felt really good in that. I felt really grounded. I felt my Kundalini activated. It was sort of a process for me of getting used to the energy.
Yeah.
Did you feel anything
like that?
Yeah.
We agree with you. Absolutely. I do think, you know, in the crop circles, just as we met by incredible synchronicity, we met other people in the crop circles. And the people that you meet, it's like the crop circles are drawing people together of like minds from all over the world. We met people from Holland and from England and from America, from everywhere. We met in those crop circles people that are seeking and looking for a higher purpose in life, and people just
It's almost like a pilgrimage to the spiritual.
Yes,
it felt like a pilgrimage, you know, like people, busloads of people, and it's like, what are you doing in a wheat field for like 5 hours, you know? But you do stuff, I don't know, things happen, right?
That's right, we were busy every second. it was a transcendent experience, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to tell people, you know, I went over there on my own or with a friend, and then, you know, I didn't never expected to run into anyone I know, and there you show up getting out of a car as I'm leaving a crop circle, and it's just like an amazing synchronistic event that we were both at the same crop circle in the same country at the same time.
And you were emerging, and we were first entering, and all the stops and things that happen when you're with a group of people to delay you, to bring you to that moment, you know, just the way it happened was just unbelievable.
So do you feel like we were sort of directed, or you think that, I mean, it seems like that, there's some other level of consciousness that's sort of in control or working with us?
I think we were with the flow. We were in the flow, and we were just living for the moment. And I think that was a very big lesson.
I think it was like a slap in the face to say that we have to pay attention to you, and you're supposed to be in our lives.
That's what it was. Well, here we are doing this radio show. So thanks. About that. No, I think those synchronicities do point us to certain things we have to be aware of. And, you know, we'll have more adventures. We can go to the stone chambers up in upstate New York, which are these ancient chambers that have a lot of anomalous activity around them.
Well, a whole bunch of photos from the chambers.
What do you make of these stone chambers? Give people a little background, because I know you're friends with Phil Imbrogno, who wrote a book about it, but what are these stone chambers?
Well, they're ancient. Originally, we thought they were like 2,000 years old, which is incredibly old, but now Phil has revised his opinion, and he thinks they're 12,000 years old. 12,000 years old in upstate New York.
That's incredible. So you think they're even come before the Native Americans came here?
This is way before that. He thinks that these were built around the time of Stonehenge.
So it could be like Atlantean chambers even? Do you think they go back?
Yeah, could be.
I mean, actually, I did a show about those stone chambers that people look on YouTube with a guy named John Burke. Have you seen that show of mine on YouTube?
No.
You can look that up. John Burke analyzed he says they're like recharging devices.
Well, Phil sort of thinks they could be portals because a lot of UFO sightings have happened very close to them.
Well, there are portals. I mean, I was in the Great Pyramid in Egypt. That seems like a portal. Have you been there?
No, I've never been to the pyramids yet.
Oh, that's an amazing trip. That's a door. That's an interdimensional doorway. Those pyramids in the Giza Plateau were not built as burial tombs. They were built as interdimensional doorways and devices to higher levels. I really think so. You know,
I would like to send a book to anyone who's interested in reading about this. Is Initiation by Elizabeth Haitch, H-A-I-T-C-H. She was a very important yoga teacher in World War II, and she wrote this book, Initiation, and it talks about her past life experiences in the pyramid as a priestess, and it was absolutely about initiation into the priesthood. And if you read that, it'll blow you away. It's beautiful.
Well, you know, this is why I like talking to you guys particularly, because it's like there's this new culture we're unveiling where, you know, past lives and orbs and crop circles, they're like a part of our common language, and most people have no idea, right?
Well, you know what? The atmosphere is rarefied. I mean, it's really hard because we're just so immersed in this, and it's so intriguing and mysterious and enlightening, because when you put your whole conscious intention into it, you will get revelations. Things will come to you. You know, that aha moment, epiphanies will come to you once you're totally immersed in this. And
I totally agree. It's as if there's, like, other parts of our brain that are opening up to... to new realities. That's why I call it new realities, you know?
Perfect.
Thanks. But it's but I also forget sometimes that other people don't speak this language. Do you forget that?
Well, we can forget it at our own risk. I think that you learn after a while to be careful and cautious and not to give people who aren't ready for it more than they can handle. And so we just I try to feel my way, you know, when I'm talking to people about what they want to hear.
Yeah, I usually try to tell people about, you know, my ideas and what I've learned. And when I finally find out that they're not interested, then you have to just stop.
You have to let it go. You just
because it's not worth the effort, really, to kind of...
Well, you do have to let it go. But, you know, I feel like at least I'm planting a seed of something, because you know, just the UFO situation, how could you not believe that this day, with all the photographs and all the evidence and the witnesses and the government cover-ups that are coming out everywhere, how could you not believe that we're being visited? I mean, but people still don't believe. It's like shocking, isn't it?
You know what?
I
personally feel that disclosure has been taking place, and I think that disclosure is going on right now. But the way it's done, it's actually done in kind of, I think it's a clever way, because this way people can accept what they're ready to accept. You know, if people want to keep it in their minds as science fiction, they can do that. If they want to keep their minds as entertainment on the mass media, they can do that. If they want to research it and get serious, they can do that. So each one accepts it on the level that they're able to. You know
that's a really brilliant point that you just made, Francine. It's like, yes, of course, everyone's talking about disclosure. When is the government doing a disclosure? But you're right. Disclosure is happening right now in the kind of one-by-one revelation and awareness that people are having. That is really great.
Whether it's England releasing files, or whether it's Larry King show, or Paul Hellyer, whatever it is, it's coming out. You know, Edgar Mitchell is making statements. All these things accumulate into, you know, a disclosure.
You're right. I mean, I've done lots of shows on UFOs. I've talked to lots of abductees and, you know, researchers. And it's like everyone in the disclosure world says, okay, one day everyone's going to know about it. But what you guys are saying, it's like, no, it is a slow integration process into the collective consciousness.
Right. That's right, Alan. That's exactly what I see.
So important that people like, you know, Steve Bassett and his name, Fox, James Fox, who wrote Out of the Blue. They're all pushing for, like, okay, it's now. But, like, a process like this, which is an integration into a galactic family, if you want to call it that, that's like a couple of hundred years in the making, in a sense. You know, it doesn't happen overnight.
Right. And you might think of it like when we start going to school, we start with kindergarten. And we work
right.
our way up. It takes years
right.
for us before we're able to when, I remember when I was in third grade and I looked at the kids in sixth grade, I thought they were so big, I could never, you know, be as big as them, you know. And you grow and you get there slowly. So
yeah.
that's what this is,
exactly.
you know. You have to grow into it.
Mm.
And, you know, I had an incredible, I don't know if you want to hear about this.
Tell us about it. Yes, I do. Tell me. Tell us.
And it was a two-part vision, but it's too much to go into both parts right now. But it was really about timeline, time travel. You know, we're so interested in things like that. Time travel, all my life I've been fascinated with it.
And unfortunately, you can't see it right now because you're on a phone, but it's all drawn out. So
is it on the Internet?
Not yet.
No, I was just working this out on paper because I got it as a visual, like an impression, like you would say a telepathic communication,
mm-hmm.
and then trying to put it down on paper. So if you want to picture it in your mind, I'll try to describe it and tell me how I'm going. If it's too difficult, I won't.
No, try it. Let's try it because I think time travel, timelines, this whole quantum consciousness is another aspect of this new culture we're talking about. So go ahead, Francine.
Well, you know, when you think of time travel, the main question that people always say is, well, if I go back in time and kill my grandfather, then I will never be born.
Mm-hmm. I disagree with that concept. I'll tell you why after, but go ahead.
So the idea is, what I received was, no, that's not what happens. There is something that is called the original creation of humanity on Earth. That is the original timeline. Because, you know, on this planet, we live in a linear time fashion.
Right.
Which is just on this planet. So that's the original creation, humanity on Earth. That is our timeline that we belong to. All right? Now,
right.
Suppose time travelers wanted to change something for their benefit. They would travel back in time, and they would make a change. The easiest way to make a change in time travel is through death. If you eliminate someone, then you're eliminating their progeny and the whole future that they might have, that might have proceeded from their life.
Right.
So you might now see that on this drawing as another line to the right of the original creation, only narrow. A very narrow line, and in that little narrow strip, you could write, chaos begins, because now something has been done to the timeline. Someone has interfered with. They've been, their life has been ended, right? That's
well, I call that there's an original timeline, and then there's a first generation divergence from the original.
Yeah.
So people in that first human timeline will have one reality, but as it's changed, we come back to a different present or future, and then that's a kind of a timeline generational offshoot of the original timeline. Does that make sense?
I saw it. We're sort of like on the same page. The way it came to me was there are several narrow timelines parallel to the original timeline, which is the wider section, okay? And the next parallel timeline would be called create death.
Uh-huh.
Parallel timeline would be wars. Because each time these time travelers are coming back, they're coming back to perfect what they did not get exactly right the time before.
Right.
It's not exactly what they wanted, so they come back. And each time they come back and change something, they create another timeline.
Right, it's another generation of timeline that's divergent from the original timeline that they were living. Right.
We have chaos, We have death being created by wars, greater wars and greater wars, and then we have another timeline of restriction where laws are instituted and making life more difficult for people. And after a while, you have resistance. So these are all the different kinds of narrow timelines. But are they real? How real are they? Well, in order for a timeline to have a wider expansion and encompass more people and become more of a reality, what does it need? It needs people to be convinced of the information that's in that timeline.
So the illusion, you're saying, in a way, right?
Illusion.
Is it the illusion of that timeline?
Believe, but once enough people believe in that illusion,
yeah,
now you start to get compliance with the time travelers, and that illusion, because of the huge number of people believing it, becomes more real, until eventually what they want is that many or all people will believe in their timeline and jump into it.
I see. But, you know, just to take off a little bit, that 2012 is a sort of recorrection of those, what I call divergent timelines. That's what they say, right? But go ahead, finish your example.
Well, in this example, it's the mass media mind control that actually gets all, as many people as possible, to believe in the illusion and jump and quicken the jump into the created timeline by these time travelers rather than remaining in our original timeline.
You could call it the Matrix in a sense, right?
You could. You could. So the idea is to stay connected to our original created timeline for humanity on Earth, which is an evolution upward, a spiral upward.
Of spirit, of our spiritual potential, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah.
These created timelines are actually bringing us in a downward spiral.
Why are they being, I mean, I do buy what you're saying. I feel that. But why were these alternative things created in the first place? What was the point of that?
The point would be controllers, the negative planners, however you want to call them.
Take us off our path.
To take us off our path, to remove us from the original creation, which was to allow us to grow and expand and move upward in our vibration.
And evolve.
Evolve. And instead,
but why would anyone in their right mind, and maybe that's the answer, want to interfere with that? I mean, where do what do the negative forces ultimately gain by doing that kind of thing? It seems silly, right?
They gain control over us, because in the original creation, we're free. We're free to evolve. But if they gain control over us and we're living in their illusion, then they begin to control us and own us, and we lose the sense of freedom, and we feel that we're victims, and one day we wake up and, you know, it's too late.
We feel we have
so
no power.
We feel absolutely powerless.
But what do people, okay, let's say someone wants to control another person. I guess it happens, you know, just in relationship or, you know, everyday interaction. But what do people really get from wanting to control someone else? I never quite understood that, because it's sort of an empty gift in a way, right?
Authority, maybe.
I think people just want more personal power over others. I don't understand why they want it. I guess it's an illusion of being powerful.
I think the people who don't need that don't understand why someone else would want it.
Exactly.
Or maybe we've been through that, been there, done that, and we're on to, like, the bigger picture. But do you think 2012, though, is a correction back to the original timeline?
Oh, dear. You know, people are asking me about 2012. I don't know. I don't think the world is going to end, like, end. But I think that we're coming to the end of the old paradigm, and it's time. For each person right now, we're being forced by circumstances around us to accomplish what's discussed in the raw material, the polarization process. It's time now to stand up and be counted for what you believe in. There's no more sitting on the fence and waiting around. Now it's time to stand up and say, this is what I believe in.
And that's why I put out, like, these ideas like UFOs, like orbs, ETs, crop circles, because I think things are shifting dramatically in the terms of consciousness, and we are, you know, people have to start to realize what they believe in and what's possible, you know?
And then after you realize, stand up and be counted, because if we don't, then remember my discussion of the timelines. If we buy into the illusion and we don't stay connected for what we really believe in our hearts and souls, in our soul awareness, then we're in danger of just being swept into the illusion timeline rather than staying in the original creation where we have a chance at moving up and connecting with our higher selves. So
how do ETs fit into all this? Because they're obviously part of our world. They're here. They somehow have some kind of awareness. What do you guys think about that?
Alan, how could you ask such a difficult question?
No, because I think you're onto something, and I think these multiple dimensions of awareness that ETs exist on are bringing us back to ourselves. I mean, they seem like maybe they're diverting, but no, I think they're asking us to function at a higher level of awareness. I mean, you have to be at a higher level of awareness just to be conscious that they exist. So they're pushing us. I think the good men's, and maybe if there's bad ones, they're all pushing us to go beyond our old programming to embrace something new, right?
Yes,
absolutely. And I heard someone say recently, someone said in an interview, and I love this, he said, we're all channeling. In a way, we're all being influenced by these more highly evolved beings. And make no mistake, the negative planets, negative ETs, are also in a higher dimension. They see things and know things that we don't see. They're just using their knowledge for power and control rather than for the greater good. But
it seems like there's a force, and it's like the election of Obama is a, it's like this guy came from nowhere. All the psychics were predicting Hillary Clinton. I mean, if you listen to Coast to Coast, right? I mean, George Norrie, had like 10 psychics on the last year. They all said, no, Hillary Clinton. This guy comes from nowhere. Really, like 4 years ago, no one even knew his name, and now he's like the President of the United States. There's a rapid acceleration of consciousness that I think Obama's evidence of.
Yes, and you know, I didn't think Hillary was going to win, I got to tell you.
Really? But what about all those, you heard those psychics on Coast to Coast, didn't you? Those psychic twins. Did Hillary, you know, I don't know who else, but I kept hearing Hillary. And
I had a dream about Obama during the campaign season. And in that dream, I saw him when he was about 8 years old. And I saw him at a moment in his life.
And what happened?
He was in his grandparents' kitchen, and there was conversation going on that disturbed him quite a bit. And at that moment, in his mind, he decided that he was going to do something about it.
So do you think he's being guided?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
What do you think, Paul?
Well, you know, I'm still waiting to see what happens with him, but I have a really good feeling about him. I like what he says.
I have to say, though, when I did meet Hillary Clinton once when she was campaigning for First Lady in 1992, I saw a huge energy field around her. I said, wow, this person's going to do something big. But I don't like her politics. I think she's really conservative. I don't think she makes a good Secretary of State because she doesn't seem very knowledgeable about, international affairs. She makes kind of reactionary statements. But I think there's an energy that's bigger than her, and maybe she'll be part of the disclosure. I mean, I think there's something big.
Rockefeller and everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Did she know Lawrence Rockefeller?
Meetings with him. supposedly discussing UFOs and extraterrestrials.
Really? Because I just had a conversation last week on this program with Michael Sala, and he thinks Henry Kissinger has all the secrets about UFOs. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, but...
Isn't it Greg Cameron's website?
Yeah.
He's got all the political people and their comments on UFOs.
Yeah,
Greg Cameron?
Obama's not that interested in space, but he's very interested in the truth, so...
But he did pick people, the head of the CIA and the head of the White House Chief of Staff. What's his name? Podesta?
Podesta.
Yeah, tell us who Podesta is again. What was his background about as far as UFOs and Clinton?
He was Clinton's White House Chief of Staff, and he was working with Leslie Keene to have NASA release the Kexburg files.
Oh, I didn't know he was working with Leslie Keene, because Leslie Keene was part of that whole UFO conference in Washington last year. And so how was he working with Leslie Keene?
Well, that's what I saw that somewhere or other, that he was working with her.
That's a great camera interesting.
So do you think Podesta is going to then, like, say to Obama, hey, you know, there's
I hope
there's
he said it already. I mean, what's he waiting for, you know? I would love Obama to be the president to really open this up.
He doesn't, I mean, maybe, but, you know, if Obama would realize, you know, there's this technology that can save, you know, the planet in a way without being enslaved to oil, I think he would go there. But I still think the cover-ups are so deep in our secret government that... it might be a while before that truth emerges.
Definitely easier to let it continue the way it is than to go for the kind of unknown of disclosure.
Yeah, and I do agree disclosure's happening, and it probably will take, I would say, a couple of hundred years till everyone on the planet realizes, hey, we're not alone. Just like Copernicus, you know? It's like... you can't expect people all of a sudden to realize that the Earth isn't the center of the universe. It looks like the center of the universe. Why isn't it? And it's like, you know...
If I may, I can tell you one way that people can understand. That is, you know, I'm a spiritual healer, and I use the power of the mind to bring healing. And I know how to focus my mind, and that's how I'm able to do it. If people only understood the power of our thoughts, how important it is that we focus our thoughts on higher ideals, on good, on loving choices, and let go of anger and resentment and getting even and all the negative things that people do. Because it's negative thoughts that keep us mired in this world of the old paradigm. If people could just learn to focus their thoughts, every time you have a negative thought, become aware of it and change it into a prayer for that person. It's so important. We can change the whole world if everyone would learn to focus their thoughts on higher ways.
Right, I totally agree. And just even focus your thought on what you want to achieve in your life. I mean, that's how Obama did it. He said, I'm going for this. And I'm not going to let anything get in my way. And you could see even today, he was sort of like in an altered state. He seemed like he was, you know, before he gave that speech, before he came out, he was like, he has an internal focus. And I think you're right, Francine. It's about focus. It is. And
every single person.
And a thought is powerful. It's not just a thought.
Right.
There's energy there, and it's leading to something.
Exactly. Every act we take begins with a thought. And our language.
Right. Everything we see around us began as a thought. The telephone we're talking on began as a thought. I mean, it's just incredible how the power of thoughts to manifest, and they manifest with focused intent. I think you're right.
Yes.
I mean...
same with the universe. Maybe the universe started with a thought and planets and everything else.
In the higher realms, thought creates instantly. It's only here in third dimension that it requires so much effort, and we have to use building materials in our hands and engineering and all kinds of things to create. But it begins with a thought, and so thinking and praying and conscious intention is all very, very important when it's done in higher ways.
When you say higher ways, what do you mean like that, by that?
What I mean is when we think of the world, usually because of the mass media and everything we hear about us every day, we're thinking of the wars and the negative things that are going on. If we can take those thoughts and transform them into seeing the entire planet in completely surrounded with golden healing light, that would be a way to transform our thoughts into higher ways. The entire planet in golden healing light. If we see a person who made us angry and we want to do something to get even, instead, surround them with golden light. See how you feel the change inside you. You will change your feelings inside you, because it's a burden that we carry around with us when we carry our negative feelings toward others.
So imagine the power of that intention. If everyone on planet Earth saw the planet with golden light around us, wouldn't that
imagine?
Be? That's quite a vision to have. Maybe that's what we should do as, like, people are planning 2012 events. Just have everyone on the planet, for one moment, imagine it with a golden light around it.
Yes. And if everyone could do that whenever they think of it, if every person, or even every person probably will never do it altogether, but a majority of people can think of the planet surrounded with golden light throughout the day whenever you're taking the time to do it.
And then what do you think that will do?
I think that would bring peace.
Healing.
Peace would descend, healing. Because, don't you see, it's not that we heal the planet. We heal ourselves. And in the process of healing ourselves, each person in their own space is bringing healing onto the planet, healing energy, golden light onto the planet. If I fill myself with golden light and you fill yourself and everyone fills themselves with golden light and then projects it around the planet, just imagine that. My goodness. Where
if everybody wants to heal themselves, then they're not going to want to destroy the planet.
That's right. Exactly.
So that's the mission. That's the mission we're on, is the mission of planetary healing, self-healing, self-love, you know? I think it's time we just appreciate who we are, our own individual, unique essences.
That's right.
You know, that's a hard one for people, you know?
It sure is. It sure is a hard one.
But if we can do that.
But impossible. It's a hard thing to do, but believe me, it's not impossible. It's absolutely doable. And right now is the time to do it. If anyone ever wanted to try it, now is the time to do it, because we are being supported. Because this is the time of enlightenment. Enlightenment is there for us. All we have to do is open up for it.
Go ahead.
That's all. We just have to open our hearts to it, and it'll come right in.
But you're saying it's the time of enlightenment, but I think exactly what that intention that you're doing, seeing golden light around the planet, is what's helping bringing this enlightenment about. That golden light is an elevation of thought and consciousness.
Good.
And that's working hand in hand with the enlightenment of our awareness.
Yes, and I would like to say one word about Obama, if I may.
Please.
There's something that's disturbing me, and that is constant pushing in the media of him being the first black president, which is important. But I think it would be even better if we could just look at him as our new president and stop thinking of him as black.
I think that will happen. I think it's like, you know, it's like Jackie Robinson, you know, the first, eventually he was just a ball player, I suppose. I mean, but, or, I mean,
that
I think
that happens when people can just look at him as our president without being so aware of the fact that he's black, just that he's our president, and he, you know, then we'll really have made a leap.
I know, but I think that will wear off. I think, you know, the same argument could be said sort of about UFOs. It's like everyone says, wow, there's UFOs. But when it becomes a commonplace phenomena, then it's a sort of like we've arrived. It's like, oh, yeah, there's a UFO, there's an airplane. I mean, it's sort of like the newness and the integration into the collective. Yeah, people are still integrating what that means, and I think it does mean a lot to have a black president, and or he's not even black, he's half, or whatever that means. But I think it's an acknowledgement of a whole section of the American population that was such an integral part of our society. You know, the black presence, you know, their music, all the contributions of that, you know, like the Jewish contribution, like the Italians, like the Irish. I mean, that subculture of people, like all the other ethnic groups, it's finally acknowledged as a real integral part of American history and American culture.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly. Mm-hmm. So maybe he would represent that, so that we can finally just really become, you know, a unified whole. And
yeah,
you know,
I think it's really important. First of all, not only that he's black, but he's, you know, young and intelligent, and he's a new face that America can present to the rest of the world. It's like we can almost be forgiven for the sins of George Bush, because it's like, you know, here's someone totally different, and we're giving ourselves a new chance, right? I mean, we're apologizing to the world for, like, what's happened, almost. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and so we hope for that, you know.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think he doesn't know what to do. I mean, he's like, you know, where do you go? What do you do? What's your first step? I mean, how do you...
So many problems. It's just, yeah, exactly. What?
I mean, in a way, it's
what
too much.
What do you do first?
Yeah, how do you expect one man to correct all the errors of the past?
Right. Everyone has so much hope for him. It's you know,
yes,
how can they actually accomplish all the things that need to be done? It's a daunting task.
But you know, the great thing about him is he doesn't seem like he has a lot of ego. He keeps saying, you know, this is not about me, it's about all of us. And I think that helps.
Yeah.
What? And what were you saying?
I like his language. I like the language that he uses when he speaks.
Yeah, I like him too. And I think, you know, if he gets a chance, I personally don't think he really knows what he's going to do to turn things around. I don't think anyone knows, and I think there are so many unknowns that in a positive way that can happen, that we just have to stay open to the unknown.
Absolutely.
And ask for that, and sort of pray, you know, as a sort of collective prayer of something new happening that we haven't expected before. Like, maybe someone will come
paradigm.
Up with that anti-gravity machine. What were you saying, Paul?
I said a new paradigm.
A new reality, yes. So, I really just appreciate you guys. And tell us a little bit about UFO Roundtable before the show's over. So, what's that about?
Well, we have a meeting the first Wednesday of every month. It's at the Will Library, which is at the very bottom of Central Avenue, when you're going up upstate a little bit.
In Yonkers, New York, yes.
Yonkers.
Yeah.
And it's a very nice meeting. We get between 25 and 30 people, usually. And
talk about at the meetings?
Well, it's usually UFOs, but, you know, people bring in other things. We're doing a lot of spirituality now. Francine does a beautiful guided meditation. In the beginning, people like that, they come for that too. And we had some guest speakers. We had Phil Imbrogno came a couple months ago talking about his new book and, you know, the Hudson Valley sightings, which is such an amazing topic. You know, a lot of people don't even realize the Hudson Valley sightings were like the biggest sightings ever in the history of the world.
Really? What years did those happen?
Like 81 to 84.
81 to 84. Wow, like a whole bunch of sightings, huh? UFO sightings over the Hudson River.
You have to read Phil's book. It's called Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind.
Okay.
Also, the Hudson Valley Sightings Night Siege.
Why don't you tell him I'd love to interview him for this program, okay?
Sure, I'm sure he will.
And just like to remind people to Google UFO Roundtable. And they'll come to our website. It's a meetup.
And they can see photos of you on there, Alan.
Right.
I know, I am on there. Okay, we're almost at Francine. Do you want to do like a one-minute meditation guided? Can you do that before the show's over? Like a quick one?
Just something.
Right. Go ahead.
Allow your body to relax and open to receive the healing energy. And as you sit relaxing and opening, coming down from the highest reaches of the cosmos is a column of golden healing light. And this column comes down in response to your call and surrounds you with the essence of divine love. And you feel the light and its warmth. And the golden light comes down through your crown chakra and travels down your spine and fills your spinal column with the essence of divine love. And the light radiates out from your spine into all your body, filling your bones and your muscles, your blood vessels and veins, all your organs, your lungs and your heart, all filled with golden healing light. The essence of divine love penetrates deeply, transforming all stress and anxiety into feelings of joy and well-being, allowing your organs to function at their highest capacity in good health for you, allowing you to feel loved unconditionally every day of your blessed life, and allowing you to share love with all who come into your life.
That is nice. Francine Vale and Paul Greco, thank you for the work you're doing. I mean, we're all doing this together. We are creating this new society, I think just as much as Barack Obama. We are creating a new world.
Well, Alan, we really appreciate what you're doing also with your show and, you know, all your great influence over these years we've had with you. It's really, you know, it's important, very important to us.
You're a very special human being, Alan, and you're much appreciated. And each one of us is doing our part. But before we go, we have to invite people to go up to Katona Museum of Art.
Tell us about the show's Paul. What day and where is it?
The Katona Museum of Art in Katona. On Saturday, there'll be an opening from 5 to 7, and the show will run for a whole month. And it's called
Contemporary Confrontations.
Yes.
Yes, Paul is a great artist, I have to say. He really is expanding consciousness through the images in his work, and I really recommend it. So,
on the website, I have like a lot of artwork to look at if anyone wants to see it.
UFO Roundtable website?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very interesting website.
And the piece that was chosen for this show is also kind of a cosmic piece that has some images in it of like the face on Mars and there's a crop circle, and there's some...
It's really in honor of Rauschenberg, and that's what the show is about, so...
So if you do go to the show, look for my piece, which is called Valentina's Journey Through Time.
Great. No, I'll look for that. I mean, I thank you. Thank you for all the work, and we'll be in touch. It's my birthday this Thursday, so.
Oh, happy birthday, Odie. 25 now.
This is Alan Steinfeld. Maybe I'll put some of your stuff up or link it on my website, which is newrealities.com.
Great.
And if you want to reach me, they can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And I have a whole brand new website happening really soon, newrealities.com. So thank you. Thank you for listening.
Alan.
Thanks. I've been talking to Francine Vail and Paul Greco from the UFO Roundtable. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and check my website, newrealities.com. I am there.